Items 3, 4, and 5 are minutes of September, our monthly financial report, and our monthly transmittal. Anyone have any questions about the consent calendar? Then I'd be happy to entertain a motion to adopt our consent calendar.
I move we adopt the consent items, items 3, 4, and 5.
Okay, there's been a motion made and seconded by Don that we adopt our consent calendar. All those in favor indicate by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? None. And abstaining? None. Okay, we're on to item 2, which is oral communications. And I would remind you that this place is on the agenda for comments from members of the board, as well as members of the public on matters that do not otherwise appear on the agenda. And I'm going to call on myself first because we have two retiring board members tonight. Nina, who has served the community extraordinarily well for the past 18 years, and Joe, who has done an excellent job for the 7 years he's been with us. So we so appreciate your service to the community. You guys have both done an outstanding job. And we have a very small token of our
for each of you.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.
You're not going to tell Gina where they came from?
No, why would I?
Well, I mean, that's your marriage, Joe. You know, I don't. Okay. Any more comments from members of the board?
Yes,
yes, Don.
I have, it's about the contract, and
okay,
it will be coming up in December.
Yeah.
And there's two things that I'd like the board to think about.
Okay.
The first is that, and it's something we get have gotten complaints about, is there's not really enough time for people to go through the contract and so forth, because they get it on a Friday and on Wednesday, you know, we have a meeting.
Mm-hmm.
So I would be proposed that we actually hand it out on the next meeting and then get comments partway through and then let it act on it in January.
I'm okay with that.
That was easy.
Yeah, I don't have any problem with
okay,
that.
Okay, good. I think, I mean, yeah. I've gotten some calls on it. So
okay.
The other thing is that we have this set aside where we accumulate an amount equal to the expense, you know, for
the
year.
The annual expense, yeah.
Yeah, and I think its time has come and gone. You know, I didn't wasn't a big fan of it, and I
mm-hmm.
and we get questions about it. Obviously, we're solid, so it's not that we're going to fail.
Mm-hmm.
So I think I'd like to see that cease.
Okay.
Okay.
Okay, the first is much easier to do than the second. You understand that?
I have a hunch it's not
yeah.
as hard as you think.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I can certainly ask, yeah. Okay, perfect. Okay, anything else from the board? Okay, members of the public. Sylvia.
I will try to project and be as loud as possible. Good evening, and help me keep time. I'm here today to follow up on a request that I only found out about recently. Actually, I have to thank Vita Doro for bringing it to my attention that Director Welsh had come before the board, I understand now in July, to request funding to assist with the community center or to ask you to entertain the notion. And then there had been some surprise that it hadn't been re-agendized. And after doing a little sleuthing, I discovered that despite Brenda's best attempts in August to reach Len and get it agendized, he ultimately, I think for September, said that he wasn't able to come before you. And I didn't know about all this, and as the lead board member on the community center, I could have helped out. But that all being said, this is actually a great time for me to come before you. I only wish I had gotten on your agenda, and I'm sorry that I wasn't able to reach you soon enough to do that. So the community center, went before KMAC, was approved, recommended to the county. The county has now has all of the plans and is doing what they call plan check prior to issuing a permit. And as part of the plan check, And this is something I knew was coming, so this is when Len and I once discussed, you know, coming before you to ask for funding. The time wasn't right, because during plan check, we know that the fire marshal looks at the plans and may recommend things related to fire suppression. And in fact, that has happened. The notes from the fire marshal recommend a particular alarm system, which had not been part of the initial plans. So I spoke to the architects and asked them what that would entail, and it would entail an additional $2,200 of time from their electrical consultant, and then the system itself is currently estimated at $25,000, and I'm adding a 15% contingency, as we have done all along in the project, for being prudent, which would bring the current estimate to, I believe, $28,750. And the alarm system is recommended because the building is unoccupied for long periods of time. Should something happen, there wouldn't be someone on premises to necessarily notice it. It's also obviously in the parkland. Stuff around it is easily ignitable. So the alarm system would be hardwired to the fire department. It would have smoke alarms, and in the kitchen it would have a heat sensor. So I have here to leave with you the plan review comments, the electrical engineer's proposal, cut sheets for the, maybe not the exact alarm system, but kind of the system that's recommended, as well as an email outlining the estimate for the alarm system.
It's a manual pull system?
It's called an NFP system, and I...
there's two kinds, automatic, you know, the fire,
I have the
fire
pulse,
and it
I have
comes
the pulse
on.
I have here, and I can just tell you if it's manual, maybe both. It has a remote annunciator and an addressable fire alarm control panel. I have all the tech specs here.
Okay.
We're going to get you copies of all those. Sylvia emailed me all of them, and I forwarded them to Brenda, so you'll get all the copies as part of next month's packet.
This is what they were given to me at this point. Yeah. We're now preparing to go to bid, and obviously once the bids come in, things become more final.
Yeah.
If you are so inclined to set aside or provide funding based on the estimate, you could do that. If you wanted to wait until the bids came in, you could do that as well. But I didn't want it to be said that we are not cooperative, nor that we were not able to come before you to make a request that was suitable to your jurisdiction.
Yeah, and Sylvia sent me all those. I forwarded them to Brenda, so they'll be in the packet for next month, Dawn, and you can look at all those things.
Okay.
Because you're going to understand them much better than any of the rest of us. And what I would propose is that we agenda for our next month's meeting motion to fund the monitored alarm system at the community center at a price not to exceed $35,000. And we are allowed to spend money on the community center to the extent it's fire protection and suppression.
Okay.
So when we talked about making a contribution to the community center, we focused on the monitored alarm system because that's what Dave Gibson recommended in his report, but his report was a recommendation, not a mandate.
There's two kinds. One is automatic, so if there's smoke
or
flames, it will then set off the sprinkler system, and then it will also send a signal out.
There is no
sprinkler system.
There's no sprinklers, okay. I didn't know. The other is called a manual one, which is means that you do that when you're in the building. Mm-hmm. I think what she probably has is what we would like is there'll be smoke alarm or something that would trigger it.
Yeah, and it's basically because they rent it out. And when you're renting it out to tenants and it's got a kitchen in it, that's where the danger is more than any from any other source.
She said there's smoke alarms and there's a heat sensor in the kitchen.
Yeah.
That's the automatic part.
That's the automatic part.
Yeah, and we had hoped that we could get all the data from the architect in time for tonight's meeting so we could vote on it tonight, but the architect was unable to come up with the information. So Sylvia wanted to present it tonight so that you would know what was coming on our December meeting packet.
Okay.
Any more questions from the board?
No, I'm sorry I can't vote on it, but I absolutely support it. So
great, thank you.
And thanks for bringing that to us.
Yeah, thanks for doing the work so quick on this, Sylvia. I appreciate it. And you can stay or you can go.
Yeah.
I know you have your own meeting tomorrow night, so.
That's
You're welcome to stay, but you don't have to. And we won't be offended if you get up and leave. Yeah, okay. Cool. Okay, any more comments from the public? Yes, Carl.
Is there anything to report on the closed session?
No. I started out our reconvening. No, we have nothing to report. Hopefully we'll have something to report at our January meeting on the subject we were discussing. Uh-oh, is it bad smoke in here, Vita? Is the air in here bad?
It's just a smell.
Oh.
It's engines.
Right? Yeah. Oh, because, well, we are where the engines are, you know, start up and go and stuff. I'm sorry.
Oh, that's okay.
You know, yeah, I didn't realize it was that bad in here myself. Yeah.
Much better in here than it is out there.
Well, it is better in here than out there, but it may be colder in here than it is out there, is kind of what I'm thinking. I don't know. Okay, no further comments from the... Go ahead.
I'd like to thank Don for his comment. I'm interested in what you just said. In principle, there probably isn't any reason why to have 6 months or a year reserved to pay the El Cerrito Fire Department. Most nonprofits and corporations will do this 3 months, 6 months, whatever, just in case the revenue tanks. The revenue here won't tank unless, if I understand correctly, there's a drop in that more tax revenues.
Or excess spending on other items. It's not just revenue, it's expenditures, both.
Let's take revenue. The only way you're going to get a big drop in ad valorem tax revenues, I believe, is if you have a major conflagration through town. And it wipes out a lot of houses. Because then the property tax is not collected at the same rate. The land might be collected if people can afford to pay it still. But the housing value, which is at least half or more of the property tax rate, is going to be lost. So if a fire were to come through here and take out, for example, a quarter of the houses in Kensington, it was done before 1922. If you take that out, you're losing a huge amount of revenue. Now, you have two choices. Either you set aside this in your back budget to take care of it, or you just don't bother, as Don suggests, which I think under normal circumstances you can find. But then you'd have to take this out of the $6 million plus that you've got in the bank, which begs the question, what are your long-term plans for that $6 million? And so what it speaks to me saying is that this district should take a very long look at exactly what they're building up reserves for and what other sources of revenue are needed to do the kinds of things you want to do. Because maybe Don is absolutely right, I hope he is, but we don't really need that because there's plenty of reserves there. But what are the reserves for? That's a long-term question.
Well, that's all indicated on our financials this evening.
Yeah. I've also been thinking we should do a financial strategy plan or something so we kind of see what happens as we go out. And I guess part of that is, you know, if we're going to do a new building, we have to look at what that looks like over long haul.
Do you mean like using outside financial consultants?
Yeah, someone outside, yeah.
Okay. I agree.
Okay, seeing no further hands, I'm going to move on to item 5. And that's you, Chief.
Good evening, everybody. Nina, thank you for your service.
Absolutely. Same to you, Chief.
Pleasure to
thank
you. Information from you all these years. I had the pleasure to work as a battalion chief with you and also the fire chief, and I thank you for what you've done for the women of the fire department and the community. Joe, ditto, just a little short period of time, I mean 7 years, just a snapshot. We appreciate it. You always came to the meetings prepared. I think your public safety background really helped us through some of the times when we would talk about labor situations and things with benefits and things of that nature. So I want to say thank you to both of you, and I don't forget your service, and I don't think the citizens forget it either. So thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. So I'm sure everyone's had the news on. I want to report tonight that our OES rig, our Office of Emergency Services rig, has been at the campfire since 1 o'clock on last Thursday. We were dispatched early on in the event. We have 4 individuals on that engine. I spoke with Captain Hoyer Nielsen today. They've been doing quite a bit of mop-up and overhaul of neighborhoods that are completely devastated, digging through the ash, digging through areas, looking for fatalities, and doing body recovery. So they have been very busy. The last report today, I did a meeting with the county op area, and CAL FIRE had members there that said that the engine probably won't be released until after Thanksgiving. Also dispatched the morning after that was Captain Krumpacker. He was dispatched as a line paramedic. The way that works is they go out in a SUV-style vehicle, and they take all their paramedic equipment so they can go out and be out in the field where the firefighters are working, where citizens may have not evacuated and could possibly be injured, and they take EMS assignments within the incident. They don't respond off the incident. They work directly under the IC for the campfire. So Travis checked in today, and he said they haven't had any real bad patients. Lots of firefighters with sprains, strains, and cuts and bruises and those type of things. So they are keeping them very busy. One of the things they're finding is, you know, the temperatures are mild and decent to work in during the day, but they're in the 30s in the evening. And when you're out on a 24-hour shift, after 12 hours of a day work going into the evening when it's 30 degrees, it's kind of hard to stay focused. But they're doing well. The equipment's in good shape, and they're in good shape. There's been a lot of discussion recently about East Bay Regional Parks. I want to follow up the East Bay Regional Parks. You've probably seen them in the area, are traveling to and fro. They've been doing work behind Camp Herms in El Cerrito, where the Camp Herms Boy Scouts backs right up East Bay Regional Park. They've been there for a few days, pushing back the fuel in that area, working on trying to get a 100-foot buffer zone there. Patrick McIntyre from the Parks District says they're just going to continue to work this way from there. So that's good news. It sounds like with the passage of their tax measure, they're going to even have more funding to work on fire mitigation. So we really appreciate that. And that's all I have for you this evening.
Is Runa by himself, or is his engine company there?
He's there with the engine, yeah.
Yeah, so we have four out.
We have a total of five on assignment right now.
Who did I miss? Travis? Runa?
Travis is out by himself.
Yeah.
On an assignment. And then Runa, Chris Renshaw. Help me out, Jose.
David
Sussman.
Yeah.
And Nick Lumber.
Oh, all right. Okay. Okay, and then we expect all of them to be out through Thanksgiving.
That's what the reports were at an op area meeting here in Contra Costa County today.
Okay, thank you. Okay, on to my president's report, and I have one item listed. I, in fact, have four items to discuss. Joe Gagne, Captain Gagne, just did an outstanding drone presentation. Saturday, maybe the 3rd of November, I'm thinking, up at Building E. He really did a nice job with that, Chief. I mean, congratulations to Joe. He had everybody look at the drone and then look at the scaled down kind of consumer drone, if you will, so that you could see what they both looked like on the ground. And then he started the thing flying and then showed us on a screen, a computer screen, what the drone could see and explained how the drone would work. So he just did a fabulous job.
He's doing some editing to the videos that he took and some of the information stuff. We're going to put that up at your request on the website.
Yeah,
so.
Yeah, we're going to put it on the website, and then you can see what the drone looks like and what the drone can see. Was really cool. Yeah, Vita.
I'd like to make a request for the use of this drone. For 2 years in a row, I have brought to the attention of the board and your staff this backyard that's adjoining the York Avenue path that is very dangerously dry with all kinds of heat junk in it. And the first year I was told that because it's not on a street that the fire marshal will not come to inspect it. So could I ask that you send a drone up to look at this thing? Because it's adjoining three houses, and we are all very concerned. I brought this up back in May. I brought a picture and the address, and I gave it to Brenda, and it's still like that. We live on a cul-de-sac, and walking down that path might be our only way of evacuating. So we really appreciate if our $15,000 drone can do us some good. By if a person can come to look at it, maybe the drone can testify to the fact that this is a dangerous place.
Thank you. Okay. Yes.
I'd like to back Nita up on that. I just thought about this. I have always been bothered by the fact that the fire marshal, in his prevention activities, cannot actually go on private property. He has to do his duty from the street. And now we have this drone that can, from elevation, look down on the problems that are on private property. So my question to the board is, are there restrictions then on the use of the drone? Can they go over somebody's property? And why not expand this to help out in that area?
You can't use the drone to fly over people's property and look in their backyard.
Okay, but you could fly up in the street and look down on the property.
Thing.
What?
Same thing. It violates their privacy. Yeah.
Do you want them hovering over your yard?
If I'm a nuisance, I just
because they want to, and they might find something.
I complain if somebody, gets after me.
If you're a nuisance, chances are you don't think you are.
Yeah. So this is a non-starter.
We don't make the law.
The one time they can fly the drone over somebody's property is if the property's on fire.
If there's emergency activities or people's properties, you do reconnaissance for the safety of the citizens and the firefighters and the property we're trying to save.
I see. Well, I'm sorry.
You have privacy rights.
York Avenue, there is on Arlington, by the steps, there's a concrete sign that says York Avenue. So if you walk up 10 steps on the York steps, on the path number 7, you can see the backyard.
So just so that we're clear, I absolutely remember you bringing this up at a meeting. You brought it up and you were going to say the address, and I said...
I did.
I said, that's okay, not say the address. Month. I said, send the address to fire administration. So it stays anonymous, so we don't have situations where neighbors are getting after neighbors. We never received the address.
Yes, that, you did. That,
then we went through a process of a weed abatement cycle this year, and at the meeting when we declared hazards and talked about the properties that were going to be abated, you then gave us the address, so the process was already started. Since that point in time, I know Fire Prevention Officer Gagne has looked into the property. I can't report out where he's at with it at this moment, but he has been given the address since.
Okay, just for your record and information, last year I actually came to the fire station. I spoke to the gentleman, to the marshal, and he told me, well, I can't look at somebody's backyard. I said, please come to my house and you can see from my house, you can see this backyard. If not, you can see it from 4 houses at the end of York. And that was the end of that conversation. So I really appreciate the fact that now there is a record of it and maybe...
What firehouse did you go to speak to the fire marshal?
Right here.
There's not a fire marshal at this firehouse.
Well, I came in, I'm just a taxpayer and don't know the proper language. I came in, I said I have a concern, and I spoke to a gentleman right by the gym upstairs, but we can't come if it's a backyard. And I said, well, come to my house. I gave you my address and nothing happens.
I will follow up with Captain Gagne upon his return from vacation personally.
Okay, that's my first announcement is with respect to the drone. Second announcement is with respect to a communication. I think you got copied on this correspondence, but I wanted people to know what an outstanding job the El Cerrito Fire Department does. I got a email from Gail Feldman last Saturday night talking about what kind of observation was there of Tilden Park. And I responded to Gail and I said, I'm going to send your email to Chief Maples, which I did. And this is all about 8 o'clock Saturday night. And before midnight on Saturday night, I got a very thorough response from Larry Carr, and the battalion chief. And I'd like to read you Chief Carr's response, because it's so informative and it's so thorough, and it comes within 2 or 3 hours on a Saturday night. So good for him. It says, Janice, part of our red flag protocols are district patrols to places where we can get a good view. East Bay Regional Park District calls for the same increased level of awareness from their staffers during dangerous fire weather events. Their police, firefighters, park staff, and volunteer trail safety patrollers are all on alert during these times. As you know, during the north wind events that typify our red flag weather, the East Bay Regional Park District lands are at front lines for our community. They immediately share fire event information from and with all areas of this county and from Alameda County. Fire event information puts our plans in motion for protection of the community. Currently, Fire Station 1 in Tilden Park is out on patrol. I spoke to Ken Smith on Engine 1, and he reports that they have increased their Type 3 engine and their water tender from 12 hours in service to 24 hours during the weather event. They were just about to go back out on patrol West Tilden, including the Upper Kensington Hill, hitting the Beloit area, and possibly making it down to the Kensington Firehouse. Our fire units face-to-face with them at areas where our districts can join, places like along Grizzly Peak Boulevard. These are not planned meetings. It does not suit either their operations or ours to be beholden to a scheduled format during weather events. Engine 65 will no doubt see them on the road, as 65 will be patrolling as well. If you have any additional questions, give us a call. So, wow, what outstanding service we received from you guys in a couple of hours on Saturday night. I mean, congratulations, Chief. Your people do an outstanding job, as always, and I thank you very much for that. And then, let's see, my third item is, at last month's meeting, I was asked whether or not I had initiated our contract negotiations with the city of El Cerrito, and I said, no, I had not, but I would be appointing a committee to discuss contract renewal with the city manager of El Cerrito, Scott Hannon. The day after our meeting last month, I appointed Larry to serve with me as a contract negotiator with the city of El Cerrito. Larry and I have met. We've also discussed things with Scott Hannon, and we will be reporting out the process of those discussions at our December meeting. And as Don just suggested, to the extent we've reached agreement by our December meeting, we'll include the proposed form of agreement in the packet, but we will not vote until January. Good. So that people will have a chance to take a look at that. Let's see, 1, 2, 3. Hang on one sec, I'm just checking whether or not I've done everything I talked about doing here. The drone, the appointment, and then Larry's memo. Yes?
Can we talk a little bit, can you unpack a little bit what the timing and the comment period will be like to have this potential agreement available to the public?
To the extent we've reached agreement, Larry and I are happy with our negotiations with El Cerrito, it'll be embodied in an agreement prepared by our attorney, and we'll include it in next month's packet. You can talk about it at next month. You can also talk about it again in January. We will not be voting on it until January.
So basically, you're going to reach an agreement on another 10-year contract?
Well, the term is one of the subjects of negotiation.
Uh-huh. So you're going to do this now in advance of the changeover since the election?
Correct.
And have two people do this and have how many weeks available for the whole public to comment on this?
It's going to be about 6 weeks.
6 weeks from when to when?
Well, from the week before our December meeting until the week of our January meeting. So it'll be about 6 weeks.
And what happens at the end of December? Is there any provision that kicks into place at the end of December on January 1st if a contract is not, or if some notice is not given about?
No, the contract runs through December 31st, 2019.
Yes, and so what happens, so there is an opportunity lost. Is that not right? I believe the deadline passes at the end of the year. An opportunity to cancel agreements or change them somehow?
Either party has the opportunity to cancel the agreement.
But after that time, you can't do it because it's 18 months.
I'd have to look at the agreement itself to see.
I have it on.
Yeah, Gail.
I guess I misunderstood your agenda when I looked at it. I thought this was a discussion item, which unfortunately I didn't get here for your public comment because there's no parking out there. But I would like to address this issue if you would like to accept that. I think I've addressed several of you, or almost all the board members, about the contract committee and perhaps taking a step back also on some other things that should be done before there's a new contract. So this isn't really a contract renewal. I mean, it is in the sense that I think everybody in the community would like to see us continue working with El Cerrito, and I think that's the question. I think it's more what the terms of the contract are in regards to the cost sharing issues, and perhaps there's some other things, but particularly around the financial issues. And looking at briefly at your contract, one, you should have been negotiating, it says your contract, the current contract says that you would have started your negotiations January 1st of 2018. Mm-hmm. So that's almost 11 months ago. So then you've waited now until just about a month ago to make this, start this process right up to an election where there are significant changes on your board. And one, I think that before you designate your final contract committee, you should wait till your new board members are seated, because the public has said they want some new people to serve on the board, and they should have a right to have a decision about who their leading negotiators are. So that's one thing. So I don't see, you waited already 11 months, so I don't really see the time of waiting until the next meeting to discuss it and decide whether or not it's going to be you and Larry or somebody else sitting on this contract negotiation. So that's the first thing. The other piece of it is that this contract has never been reviewed by any outside party, meaning not a legal party per se, but any kind of financial analysis or operational analysis type of review similar to, say, what the police district has done in regards to having their whole organization looked at by matrix. I think at this point, and I've discussed this with other people in, who are public administrators who, say it's probably time that they did something similar. And it's not to say that there's anything wrong, but I would certainly feel better as a taxpayer and a person living in this community to know that, there's been some outside look at it, that we are getting a fair and reasonable agreement. And I know you've said that we have been all along, and I know that, that is the opinion of the majority of the current city board and of the city of El Cerrito, who feels like we're probably getting a better deal. It may be true, but I want to know, and I don't see why this hasn't happened up until this point. And so now that this new contract needs to be negotiated, I think it's time, before you sign it, to have it looked at. And I would like to see that on your agenda for December, moving forward with that. This is not a criticism on the city of El Cerrito's fire department at all, so I don't want to see it that way. I am thrilled that you, I asked that question over the weekend, and that I got responded to immediately by yourself after you heard from the department, and I thought it was a great response. It made me feel better. I was ready to go out and start walking around the park because I was so worried about fire starting. So knowing that, there was, something being done, really set me at ease. So, I'm happy with the service. That's not the issue. But I really would like to hear a serious discussion about this next month, and I would also like to reconsider how the appointment for this negotiating committee is made. And I appreciate you taking the time to listen to me tonight.
Thank you. Okay, seeing no further discussion.
I would actually ask Janice that you not be one of the negotiators, because in January, you're supposed to initiate this process, and you waited 11 months. I think maybe other people should be negotiating this and not you. And I agree with Gail, you should wait until you change over.
Okay, we're on to new business, which is item 8. And item 8 is the lease agreement between the Fire Protection District and the Community Services District for occupation of the Public Safety Building. The proposed agreement runs from January 1st, 2019 through June 30th, 2020. And that it's an 18-month agreement rather than a 12-month agreement, which is our usual because we wanted it to coincide with fiscal years rather than calendar years. And if you take a look at the agreement, you'll see the lease payments are $3,050.25 per month over that 18-month period. I asked Brenda to come up with the recap of all of the building costs that we've incurred since 1994 to through the present, and those costs are $2,748,000, an average over 21 years of $131,000 a year. And I'll be happy to give you a copy of this, Sylvia, so that you can run it and give it to a copy of each of a copy to each of your board members. Or we could actually run probably five copies for you tonight if you want to.
Ask for that, that's fine.
Yeah, I mean, your board has already approved this, but I think some members of the public were questioning our integrity in the sense of how much had we really incurred by way of costs, and this is the item that shows that. And it indicates that we're asking the fire district, the community service district, to pay a little around 25% of our annual costs. Which is, if my math is right, I didn't do the formal calc. I'm eyeballing it. I think it's about 25%, which is significantly less than the space you occupy in the building. So I would be happy to entertain a motion to adopt the lease agreement between the two districts. And if there are any questions, I would be happy to take questions first from the board and then from members of the public.
I would like to make the motion that we adopt the a lease agreement for the period July 1st, 2019 to the period until June 30th, 2020, noting that this agreement already has been approved by the police district.
Okay, is there a second to Larry's motion?
A second.
Okay, there's been a motion made and seconded. Seeing no further comments, I'll call for a vote. All those in favor of approving the lease agreement contained in your board packet this evening, please indicate by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed? None. And abstaining? None. So the agreement has been approved, and Rochelle and I will execute it at your convenience then, Brenda. Okay, we're on to board reports then. And board reports are informational reports from board members and or staff concerning their committee assignments. The Finance Committee traditionally will not meet again until January. And in January, what we do is our mid-year budget review, where we take a look at our budget and our actual spending, and we see how close we are to being on target, and then make any revisions necessary. We actually look at the budget four or five times a year. The Finance Committee looks at it the first time in May and prepares the budget. It's adopted by the board in June, and then the legislature requires us to formally adopt it once again in September, and then we do our mid-year budget review in February. So it's a very public document. It's very accessible to you. It's on our website. And the Finance Committee just generally only meets a couple times a year, once to prepare the budget in May and then once to prepare for the mid-year budget review. And then again, yeah, that's right, just the two times. Yeah. It's January and May. So we have no formal report tonight.
What is that meeting?
What meeting?
The January meeting.
Hasn't been set.
It'll be late in January, though.
It's usually late January, like in the 20s, something like that. We'll know what our January meeting will probably announce when that time is.
Hopefully it won't be at noon, because I missed the last one because of that. Normal people work during noon time.
Including our accountant.
Yeah. But yeah, but still.
Yeah, I mean, we've said several times we've scheduled evening meetings and then no one came. So now we convenience our accountant, for whom evening meetings are very difficult. Yeah, we've heard your comment before and responded. Okay, on to the public safety building.
Question, please.
Yes.
It seems strange that the Finance Committee would meet in May, but there would not be any minutes of that Finance Committee released until when the next committee meeting and the minutes are approved.
Until they're approved.
What's
correct.
Interesting is that, as you point out, you have a meeting in May to prepare the budget. Then in June, the budget is adopted, but no one has seen the minutes from that meeting. Could not even provisional meetings be released to the public shortly after the main meeting, so at least we can see the rationale for what you discussed and how you decided what you did?
I don't know that rationale would even be, we'll consider that. But I'm not sure the rationale would be contained in the minutes.
We can think about that.
I'm not willing to opine right now.
The reason I ask about it is that you approve things in a budget as line items for which the Finance Committee has discussed these items, but we don't understand what was discussed or why. And that seems to be an issue of transparency.
I've heard your comment. Okay, on to public safety building. We talked about Sylvia's comment about, that was the community center. Yeah, we've talked about the public safety building in the sense of the rental of the public safety building. I don't know that anything else has been happening on the public safety building, Don?
No, I mean, I'm
Larry?
Hoping we can get going on it, but it seems to be
more. 55 Avenue, 2 Avenue, 7 Avenue,
so we hope it gets going again. The one thing that I had thought about is doing some sort of an economic strategy and seeing how all the costs play out over 20 years. It's different than getting a loan, but just seeing where we are, and then what other things might come along that we want to keep in track.
Yeah.
So I would say that maybe come back with some kind of idea, and maybe you and I can talk about it in January.
Okay. Let's see. I already talked about the drone demonstration earlier. The demonstration garden, you exchanged emails with our landscape designer, Brenda. Can you guys hear Brenda over the? Let's wait just a minute until the radio conversation is done. I think we're going to wait until the radio silent a minute, and then go ahead.
Do you know when the drone demonstration video is going to be posted to the website?
Joe's on vacation, and he's the one who did the video, and he's editing it, so it might be as long as 2 weeks.
Okay, but so sometime in December.
I think that's right. Does that make sense, Chief?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, and then we're going to put it up on our.
Well, I'm writing a story about the. Very
good. Yeah.
Nice.
Okay. And you got the pictures that we took and sent you and stuff and the. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, great. Brenda, you've been trading.
They're on scene.
Oh, all right, okay.
The demonstration garden.
Yeah, okay, so we're on to the demonstration garden, and Brenda's been trading emails with our landscape architect.
Yeah, so she just sent me late this afternoon the draft construction documents, and I will forward them to you and Sylvia so you can see them, and if we have any more comments to give her before she finalizes everything. So
great.
That's where we're at.
Okay, good. And then we're still hoping to go out to bid in the spring. In January. Yeah, January, and then do our planting in the spring.
Right.
Okay, great.
When you're done, right?
It doesn't matter.
Well, we have to work it around their construction.
Right, I was going to say, I would think trucks would maybe have an impact.
Well, we've told them not to use that site because impacting for staging.
Compacting that ground, yeah.
Yeah.
Do you work around that?
I mean, I don't think we're going to start construction until spring at the earliest. You know, March, our construction, ideal construction window is March 18th through the third week of September for the community center based on the KCC schedule.
Yeah. I'm not laughing at Sylvia. I have to explain. Vita and I have another life outside of here, and that is with the Arlington Community Church, where I'm the moderator. So we're talking about moving the school program, and your board's coming down there too. So we laugh because, totally out of anybody's control, these construction costs are running us. I mean, timeline. That's what the giggle was.
Yeah. Okay, cool. I was remiss earlier this evening when I was thanking everybody. I'm just remembering when I look down at Brenda now. I'm so glad you're back, and a healthy
you
is back. You've had a marvelous recovery, so good for you.
Thank you.
I'm glad to have you here again. That's great. Yes?
I was at the meeting, but I forgot how much is the landscape architect, or excuse me, designer charging for this garden?
For the design?
I don't have it on the top of my head. I can email it to you if you don't.
Okay, I thought that there was a motion at one of your meetings that was, my recollection said it was about
$8,500
for the design stuff.
Brenda will go back and take a look and email you the answer, Vita. I don't know that she has it off the top of her head.
And so, do you have, how much do you have in your budget? How much have you budgeted for this garden?
50.
$8,100. I do have it, actually. It's in my binder.
And the number was?
$8,100.
And that's been approved, correct?
Yeah, yes. And we've enlisted a bunch of potential Eagle Scouts who are going to do a lot of the grunt work.
You know, I'm sorry. It's have been bugging me from the day one. I think this is a frivolous way of spending the taxpayers' money. $50,000 for a demonstration garden for what? There are no plants that are fireproof unless you're putting, steel or something. But why are we doing something that's so frivolous when we can spend this money helping the other district to bring the standards of the community center where
if we did that, we would be violating our fiduciary duty, and each of us would be personally liable for all the money we spent. That's correct. We are allowed to spend money on emergency medical services and fire protection, Vita.
Okay, so can you tell me what is the emergency reason for this garden?
Fire prevention.
The garden is a fire prevention?
We're showing the residents of this town and any other town that wants to come see them what plants are fire safe and should be used instead of junipers and manzanita and eucalyptus.
Now, we can't do this on a virtual garden where everybody can.
That's your suggestion. You've made that suggestion at
We've
the last three
before.
Meetings.
Yes,
we hear you.
Because it really bothers me to see that
$50,000
of the taxpayers' money is going to go to the ground. And guess what? The following week, you're going to come and see half the plants are gone. Who's going to be replanting them? Who's going to be taking care of them? Who's going to be watering them? Who's going to do the maintenance? Are you expecting the other district to fill
No, we've agreed to do all that as part of our agreement with the other district.
Is that included in the $50,000?
Mm-hmm.
The maintenance?
Correct.
For 1 year or for 2 years or for the life of
What
the
did
garden?
We contemplate it's going to be per year? 1500? Maybe 2000?
Maybe 2000 or something.
Yeah, Anthony.
So, just to be clear, the purpose of the demonstration garden is for, shall we say, vegetation management for fire safety.
Yeah.
Correct.
Not for water conservation and drought issues.
Correct. It's fire prevention.
Okay.
Yeah, Paul.
If I recall correctly, the powers of a fire protection district include emergency preparedness.
Correct.
So any money that you put into the community center that makes it safer as a shelter for gathering place, or for that matter, makes it usable for your continued convening as a governing body, is within your powers and will not be a breach of fiduciary duty. That's the way I read it. And the reason I bring it up in this context is if you've been listening, as I do every time I get in the car, to more and more stories about what's going on up in Butte County Fire and the poor people in Paradise. I heard an interview with one of the city councilmen of Paradise. And they, of course, are devastated. And they're finally getting together as a board, as a council, in a borrowed meeting chamber
in Chico.
And the poor guy was saying, but, you know, we're devastated. We have no tax base. How are we going to rebuild? So how does that tie in? You need a place to meet. And that could be a place to meet. That could also be a place, as a matter of fact, it is in your operations plan, if I'm not mistaken, is a temporary shelter. So that's emergency preparedness. And I think you could well decide to spend on that purpose far beyond the alarm system that Sylvia was asking. Again, just one person's opinion.
Yeah, you're asking board members to bet their houses on that.
Well, you get a legal opinion.
Yeah, or we could ask for indemnification agreements from people like you.
Or we could at least ask our lawyer. What, I mean, we've gotten legal counsel on this before. We've got legal counsel on the rental agreement. And we,
yeah, Anthony.
Yeah, so on this subject, again, this board spent hundreds of thousands of dollars on the East Bay Mud new water system.
Right.
You shared costs with them. So explain to us how you can do that, but you can't spend money on it.
You have to have fought a fire and understand that you need water to fight fires. That water system was put in to enhance our firefighting capability at the wildland urban interface.
That water system services all of the houses in Kensington too. It's also a domestic water system, and to my mind there's a real question as to the balance that you come to between your spending money on their pipes.
East Bay Mud's obligation is to provide drinkable water to the community. They have no obligation to provide water for firefighting. It's potable water is their statutory obligation. That's the difference, Anthony. And we enhanced the distribution system so that we had sufficient water to suppress fires throughout the community. It's not just on the ridge, Larry. We put hydrants throughout the community and backed up all the dead-end pipes. Yes.
Let me correct you on that, Thomas. They are also responsible to maintain certain fire flow under California Water Works standards. So you're not quite correct on that. So East Bay Mud has to at least provide sufficient fire flow. What you did was you enhanced that, which is
correct,
which is admirable. But to say that they have no responsibility for maintaining fire flows and providing fire flow is incorrect.
It's minimal.
It doesn't matter
as opposed to yes
or not. They are obligated. You said they weren't. They are obligated under regulation and law to maintain a certain fire flow. Thank you.
Which our chief deemed inadequate for community safety.
Regardless of that, when you say they have no obligation, that's wrong.
Okay, I stand corrected. Okay, on to
Janice,
excuse me.
I'm sorry.
Excuse me.
Oh.
Returning to the demonstration garden for the region topic, what can you explain some of the fire management principles behind your rationale for creating and selecting and designing what you did?
Our landscape designer is aware of plantings that are fire resistant, and they're the ones making suggested planting decisions for us.
Okay, so we've heard words like fire safe and fire resistant. Having studied the subject myself, I can tell you, having consulted some of the best minds here at Berkeley, I can tell you that in a 1,400-degree fire, no plants are fire-resistant or fire-safe. And so it's not a question of what plants are there. In fact, the plants that exist there now, which are simply some grass and weeds, create less biomass and therefore less hazard than a densely planted garden. So the main thing is biomass, not what kind of plants. The kind of plants is irrelevant, unless, of course, it's manzanita and juniper. That's exactly right.
Do you know how much manzanita and juniper there is in Kensington?
And so, why aren't we spending a whole lot more money for education removal for that? But that's a different subject.
We are.
Well, no, actually, you reduce that number less, but it's okay. So, the other thing about this is that it's not just biomass, it's also placement. It's placement with respect to the structure. So unless your garden has a sample structure with distances and plants engaged to reflect safety in that respect, it's not really helping. It's just a bunch of pretty plants that can be used in gardens. And we all agree that some plants are more fire resistant than others because there are torches, but we don't want to plant eucalyptus and manzanita and juniper. Apart from that, it's pretty much possible.
Okay, I'm on to the Contra Costa Special Districts Association. You went to their last meeting, I think, Larry?
I did go to the last meeting, and I have to confess that I totally forgot and did not write up a report.
Oh my God, you always do such a good one, too.
I will have one at the next meeting, but my recollection was that not an awful lot happened at that meeting.
Okay.
Of any particular interest to us.
Okay, and then I'll report on the California Special Districts Association. I went to two of their committee meetings last Thursday. What was it, November?
You said Thursday.
Yeah, last Thursday. And one thing we did is approve all of the professional development options that they have available for board members for next year. And I highlighted a few of them, Brenda, and I would ask you to work with our two new board members to enroll them in courses. The ones that make sense for them are, one, who does what, best practices on board staff relations. Two, what every board member should know. Three, understanding board member and district liability issues, for best practices in managing district investments. And then in the spring, they're going to have two additional ones that we need to have our new board members undertake so that we maintain our district of distinction status. It's ethics training and sexual harassment training. And then they are also going to have the in-person governance programs that we should schedule our two new board members for. So if you would work with them on scheduling those. The webinars are on-demand webinars, so they can watch them at home or at the office, and we pay for those. The ethics and the sexual harassment, I think, one you can do in person if you want. They're both available on demand. And then the governance training is available. That's the weekend. It's a 2 or 3 day commitment.
You ought to start the list out by the Brown Act, I think.
We ought to put a Brown Act in there. You're right, Don. Yeah. I forgot to put Brown Act training in there.
One.
Yeah, the Brown Act training is one of the webinars. I don't know if I've got my... No, I didn't bring the
whole... But I would also encourage the new folks. You know, the best thing for me was always to sit in a room with other district people and hear the Q&As, if you will, about the Brown Act. It's very complicated and subtle, and I at least don't get it simply by reading it, or even the online things. It's still limited. So I just encourage you to go to all kinds of classes and conferences.
I'm thinking they ought to start it now, and then they could do your fancier one later, just so they get a sense of the basics to it.
They will. I mean, I'm just encouraging.
Yeah.
That's all. Yeah.
I think technically they won't be allowed to enroll in anything until December, because they're not board members until December. December 3rd, I think.
That's real soon.
Huh? Yeah, no, it is short. But but Brenda can work with them on getting these other things scheduled and everything, and we can enroll them in that. Okay, let's see. On to the Diablo Fire Safe Council.
Yes. There was no meeting in October. Our next meeting is tomorrow, and I will be there.
Oh, good. Good for you. As will Ciara, I bet. Yes.
And by the way, for everyone's information, the Diablo Fire Safe Council is the organization we work through to get grants for groups of individuals to get rid of their juniper or any other highly flammable material and to replace it with
fire safe plants.
More fire safe plants.
Yes, you are.
Tomorrow at the Diablo Fire Safe meeting, I will be presenting requests for a number of Kensington projects. These are all to be funded out of our Kensington Special Projects Fund, which is a combination of community member donations and fire district match.
Correct.
This year we are already over $13,000, whereas last year we had just hit $10,000 by this time. I have no idea how things will go from here on out, but this self-funding is hugely important because Diablo Fire Safe Council had no grants from the California State Fire Safe Council this year. None. But because we fundraise, because our fire board supports us, this allows Kensington projects to be self-funding.
Good for you. I think I'm looking for the budget now, Sierra. You maybe remember better than I do. But as I recall, we budgeted $20,000 as a match this year. And what we've done, when you go out and fundraise, if you exceed what we've budgeted, we always go ahead and match you anyway and amend our budget.
I just wanted to give you an update.
Yeah.
And then we pay when billed by Cheryl.
Yeah.
Yeah, but the item is budgeted. So we're good for the money. You know, it's budgeted and we're square on that. When Cheryl sends us a bill, we pay it to match the funds that you raise. And good for you. You do an absolutely superb job. It's great. And then what we do is use those monies for primarily juniper removal grants, and then we also do grants for fire safe planting after the junipers are removed. Yeah.
This year, we are ready to commit all of the fire district match to juniper removal because it is just such, it's a serious problem in Kensington.
Yes, it is.
And it's a serious part of our evacuation problem. When we watch those films, then our television screens are orange and the flames are on both sides. Well, I invite you to drive Kensington streets where the juniper is on both sides. And if it's burning, that's what we're going to drive it through.
And I bet Ciara will give you a personal juniper tour of Kensington, which I have taken with Ciara, where she points out the worst neighborhoods and how it's going to impact evacuation. And she's right, the amount of juniper up here would knock your socks off. And I know Michael Bond showed a video up at the community center on one of his fire safe presentations, and I believe it's a video that's available on YouTube, and you could search it if you just asked it to show you. I can't remember the name of it, but if you look at YouTube, it's a car parked in a driveway and there's juniper on either side of the driveway, and the car is completely consumed in under 2 minutes. It's completely destroyed. It's absolutely horrific how bad juniper is. And if we ought to show that. Maybe we ought to put that one on our website, Brenda, and people would believe how bad the juniper problem is. If we put a link to that on our website, let's look and see if we can find that. It's a YouTube video, and it's absolutely breathtaking.
It's a tough sell. I mean, I talk to my neighbors all the time. We're loaded, if you ever come into Yale Circle, with juniper. They love it. I tell them the money is there. I've talked to you about this, Ciara. So it's more than just announcing it and talking about it. I know Linus put things in the paper. I guess we all have to be word of mouth folks, too, because it's really critical.
Actually, my question is about the junior removal. I'm very concerned about it. I learned about it from Ciara. And,
it's a nice program, yeah.
So what is the budget? I hear that we have so much juniper in Kensington. I have juniper surrounding my house. I've been talking to neighbors. I've been talking to people when I meet them. I heard somewhere that the budget was $3,000 per year. What is the budget?
Per individual, I think. Not in gross.
Okay, what is the total budget? How much do you think it would take to remove Kensington's juniper, and what is the current budget?
What we do is get Ciara's money and then match it. And that becomes our budget.
Dakota, this year we have set aside $10,000 to pay for juniper removal.
So it would be $20,000 then, you're saying?
On the match.
People have to agree to it, Dakota.
No, I understand.
And that's like my neighbors, they want it. So.
I understand. Yeah. My neighbors want it now too.
Yeah.
And most people that I actually take time to talk to over time about is want it. So I want to know, is the money there?
Yes, there is money there. What it takes, we get an estimate on each project, and then we whittle away one at a time.
But so if it's $3,000 per person, but there's $10,000.
Not all projects are $3,000 projects. Some projects are $1,000 projects. I can't get together with you.
So I would love this. I have, as you know, massive forests of juniper surrounding.
It's very easy to make an appointment, have somebody come out for the estimate.
I guess my concern is there really enough money allocated for this?
The answer was that there's $20,000 this year, which matches $20,000 up to $20,000 that CR raises, so that's at least $40,000 between the two groups.
Correct.
Right.
Yeah, Lynne.
So my question is about even larger amounts of money, which is, I'm talking about Cerritos Canyon and the buildup of vegetation there. And I understand that it's possible to get grants through the hazard mitigation plan. So I'm wondering, how does that work? Could you explain
how that works? Lance is going to be better. And part of that is we're waiting for the Community Services District to enact their hazard mitigation plan, because when we apply for grants, you get points for coordinating with all of the local governmental agencies. So we've been waiting to apply until the Community Services District enacts their hazard mitigation plan.
And so who does that money come from? Is that from FEMA, or is that from the federal?
I'm going to let Lance go on this.
Those grants can come in a lot of different levels. They can come from FEMA, they can come from the state, they can come from the Division of Forestry. Ultimately, when you tie it back to a hazard mitigation plan, in this situation, the hazard mitigation plan calls out vegetation management in the wildland interface area. I believe Berkeley calls out the same thing. So we would partner and write a regional grant for that area that calls out, these are the areas we want to clear, these are the plans that are in place that show this is, I mean, I always refer to it, it's not really this, but it's like shovel ready. You've determined there's a hazard here, you have proof. Your plan went through a review process, it went through state OES, it went to FEMA, and it came back for local adoption. And so once it's done that, then you have a document that's your guiding document for why you're writing the grant. Ultimately, something like that would work in conjunction with the CSD and with the City of Berkeley. Or if we were in the Canyon area, we'd work with
the
Parks District, the CSD, and the Fire District. The situation with the hazard mitigation grants right now is, although they're in place, as long as California keeps having these catastrophic fires, all that money gets funneled off to after disaster grants.
Yeah.
And so they tie back to that. And so if you have a hazard mitigation plan in place, you have a devastating fire, you called out that there was this issue, well, when they rebuild, they'll rebuild and get you grant funding to meet what you were trying to get to, even though you weren't at that point when you had the catastrophic event.
Mm-hmm.
Why is it that juniper doesn't come under the fire marshal and hazard mitigation?
Because it doesn't. It's a plant that is watered. It can be trimmed, so it's considered ornamental. and that hasn't fallen into a category where it's prohibited. It's just like a eucalyptus tree is a terrible species for fire hazard, but if it's limbed up and cleaned, you can't be forced to take things off private property.
Yes.
It's like flying the drone over. I can fill this room with people that if you said that, they would not agree with you.
My name's Arianna Chakos, and I have a lot of interest in these issues. Cities of Mill Valley has passed the most stringent, I think, set of requirements on local property plantings and whatnot, and I would, you know, ask that our board look at that ordinance. And, so actually she would be possible to make some legislative call on what kind of plants are appropriate for our environment.
So are you alluding to the fact that we can pass legislation to cause people to forcefully remove their junipers?
Yes, sir. Right. You should look at, I'll send you the materials. The city of...
yeah, I'd love to see them, yeah.
You have that power.
You, and who pays for it?
I'm sorry,
you could take the money that's going to this demonstration garden and renew a lot of junipers.
So I think that's an interesting idea and a resourceful idea to explore. And the other thing I wanted to mention is that with the federal declaration in this last set of fires, there is going to be a great amount of hazard mitigation money available. And so the districts, if you're working together, if you're working with other jurisdictions, have to be poised and ready to file a notice of interest with State Office of Emergency Services. And that will be happening in the next probably 4 to 5 months. So you should be ready for that. And the passage just a few months ago at the federal level of the Disaster Recovery Reform Act, DRRA, is going to open up a lot of pre-disaster mitigation monies, and that's another conduit for which Kensington is well poised, because you have the reserve fund to meet match requirements for that. So I think that there should be some concerted examination of these programs and have Kensington step up maybe more actively than it has in the past, because we're in an unfortunate situation with these big fires, but we can learn from it and maybe make some improvements for our community.
Yes.
So it seems like it would be great to have a committee that would look into these, the possibility of these grants, and start writing stuff up. That's very good to hear that, because then you can pounce the moment that you can, and then first in line often actually gets funded.
Well, this is why Diablo Fire Safe Council was formed in the first place. That's what we do. But it's a more global. It's not just Kensington. It's all of Alameda and Contra Costa County. So it gives us access to larger pools of money. So we have been doing that for years, I guess is what I'm saying.
But what I'm saying is that there's a limited amount of money through Diablo Fire Safe. I'm talking about probably to clear the canyon of dead wood and that kind of thing would probably cost around $100,000.
Uh-huh.
It would be a huge benefit to everyone on both sides of the canyon, obviously, to clear the canyon. So where would that $100,000 come from?
Well,
not from Diablo Fire Safe.
Well, there's no reason it couldn't. Right now we're encountering a funding problem of Diablo Fire Safe Council, but as has been mentioned, probably in 4 or 5 months, there's going to be additional money available that Diablo Fire Safe Council is going to go after. And I think we will as well. But we have more clout if we do it through Diablo Fire Safe Council, I guess this is my point. I don't think it's one or the other. I think we need to go pursue both routes. But I was just addressing we haven't done anything in the past. Why don't we go after grants? We've been actively pursuing grants.
No, I was not saying that we haven't done anything, and I'm very aware of Diablo Fire Safe because we removed all of our juniper through Diablo Fire Safe. So I'm not saying that. I'm just saying that that given the hazard mitigation plan and presumably hopefully the KBPCSD will pass tomorrow, and so we'll be able to have, you know, additional effort to be able to apply for these grants, it seems like it would be good to have a dedicated committee that would look into possibilities of grants and also what we could actually apply for.
I think the chief staff also does that.
Mm-hmm. Well, that
and it may be a question of whether it's more appropriately done by staff or board.
Uh-huh. Or it could be a group, you know, a couple of citizens, a couple of board members, and staff.
Mm-hmm.
To Mary Ed's point, as she goes, as the chief realizing Mill Valley did have about four types of plants. I remember they were juniper, manzanita,
eucalyptus,
and bamboo.
Bamboo?
Yeah. I don't know the answer, Chief, to who pays for this, whether Mill Valley is, I mean, they seem like they're pretty low to do. Whether they've got the money, the homeowners do it, or it's a combination. I'm sure that's discoverable. Don't know the answer, but I think that in a place where we actually bank hundreds of thousands of dollars a year in excess revenues, and it seems a shame that CR has to raise money at all. Why isn't she just given the money to do whatever she needs to get what's done? It's a pittance. I mean, $10,000-$20,000 is a pittance compared to what's banked here when it's such an emergency. I just wish it would be easier.
Okay, we're on to the last item on our agenda, which is correspondence. And we have a very nice letter. Is this the, not the one from your husband, it's from one of the other Girl Scout parents. Yeah, on Dave Gibson's presentation to the Girl Scout troop, which apparently was a big hit. Good for Dave. Well done. It was a big hit, so good for Dave Gibson. And then we also got a thank you note from a resident on the shredding event that we have twice a year up in the parking lot between the community center and the church. So, seeing no further items on our agenda, I would be happy to adjourn our meeting at 8:20 tonight.
Okay.
And I will. Great.
Yeah.
Brenda, I don't know how to research things on YouTube. Do you know how to?